You're with Virginia on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Josh Frydenberg is the Federal Treasurer. There are a lot of issues to get through, including the money that the federal government's just announced to establish a new Canberra Holocaust Museum and Education Centre in the ACT. We're going to get to that and some other economic questions as well. Josh Frydenberg, good morning to you.
Good morning, Virginia. Nice to be with you.
Before we get to other things, do you know when Malka Leifer will arrive in Australia?
No, I don't, but obviously I've been watching those events closely, and justice delayed has been justice denied, and I think everyone is looking forward to justice being served.
Does the federal government have a concern that it's taken so long since she left Israel to actually land on Australian soil? Are you worried that something else is afoot?
Well, obviously those matters are being managed by the Foreign Affairs Minister, the Attorney General. I do know that it's taken some years for her to come to Australia because she's been exhausting the legal processes in Israel. That's been unfortunate, but it's also been their processes. But now that she's on her way to Australia and obviously here to face justice.
But you're pretty sure that our security services will have a handle on where exactly she is right now?
Well, again, I don't know the specifics about the arrival, but what I do know is that she's on her way to Australia.
And she'll have to quarantine, I guess, here in Melbourne, yes?
I'm sure all the health practices are being adhered to.
I want to talk in a moment about the money that the government's putting towards establishing a new Canberra Holocaust Museum to go with the other ones that are in states around the country. But it is International Holocaust Memorial Day today, which is a very difficult day for not only Jewish people, but for really all right-thinking people around the world. But as a Jewish man, when you see far-right activists such as the so-called Proud Boys out and about in your hometown of Melbourne yesterday, as they were, a group that's now specifically trying to rebrand itself in the US as anti-Semitic, how does that make you feel?
Well, I think it's frightening for us all. I think it's very concerning, and there is a rise in far-right conspiracy theories and a rise in anti-Semitism globally, as well as we've seen it here in Australia. And indeed, in Melbourne, we've seen school kids as young as five being called Jewish cockroaches and swastikas daubed on advertising for theatre productions, dare I say it, of an Anne Frank show, and a number of other examples where anti-Semitism has been on the rise. But to the credit of governments, state and federal, this is a real focus for them. And I do congratulate the Andrews government for ensuring that Holocaust education is being taught in all schools across the state for years 9 and 10. I think that's a good example for other states to follow.
The government's providing $750,000 towards the establishment of a Canberra Holocaust Museum and Education Centre. I must admit I was surprised to learn that there wasn't one in Canberra.
Well, there had been exhibits, including at the Australian War Memorial, some very powerful ones. Indeed, when Paul Keating opened one many years ago, he said how daunted he was to speak about the unspeakable, but how important it was for exhibits such as those to be made available so that we could remember the loss of innocence, but also the lessons passed. We have seen the South Australian government help establish a museum there in Victoria. In New South Wales, museums have been long-standing, supported by both state governments, and the Palaszczuk government and the McGowan government, to their credit, have also announced funding recently for the establishment of Holocaust museums, and our partnership is with Andrew Barr's government here in the ACT as well. So these are not necessarily federal-only support packages. These are done together with state and territory governments, regardless of the political persuasion. And today I put pen to paper with Josh Burns, a Labor member for the federal seat of McNamara, who also lost family members in the Holocaust, just to remind everyone about the importance of International Holocaust Remembrance Day, and to remind everyone that the Holocaust was a crime not just against the Jewish people, it was a crime against humanity, and there were thousands and thousands of Roma and Sinti and homosexuals and disabled and Jehovah's Witnesses and religious and political prisoners who also died at the hands of the brutal Nazi killing machine, as well as the 6 million Jews and the tragically 1.5 million Jewish children.
It's going to the rise of anti-Semitism, the Proud Boys and far-right groups. they're going to have to be called out, aren't they, and called out loudly by political leaders, by leaders in society, by everyone, by our federal leadership in particular, if it's not to rise in the way that it has in the United States.
Absolutely.
On reflection, should the Capitol riot and everything that signified with the rise of the far right in America, should it have been called out just a bit more strongly by Scott Morrison, by the Prime Minister? It was disappointing to many that he seemed to take a mild approach to that.
Well, I disagree. He did call it out. I've called it out. Others have called it out. I mean, it was despicable. It was disgusting. And as I say, it was frightening to see that attack on the United States Capitol, which has been a beacon of democracy for the rest of the world. And as you say, there were people in that mob who were wearing Camp Auschwitz T-shirts, the Proud Boys, QAnon, and other groups have been promoting some anti-Semitic rhetoric and conspiracy theories. And that terrible T-shirt that we see as well, 6MWE, 6 million wasn't enough, as a reference to the Holocaust. So on this day, like all days, we should remember the innocent, but also we should say never again.
Should those groups be shut down?
Well, again, that's going to be a matter for legal authorities. I do know that our security agencies are watching the rise of the far right very carefully and taking whatever steps they do deem necessary.
I wanted to ask you, we would never give an Australia Day award to a Holocaust denier. For trans kids being denied their humanity and being called of the devil by now newly anointed AC recipient Margaret Court, that's their version of that kind of outrage. So given that context, is her award then appropriate?
Well, Virginia, I totally disagree with what Margaret Court has said about, you know, homosexuality and transgender children, and so I, you know, disassociate myself very clearly with those comments, like others do. But as you know, this is an independent process that government doesn't direct, and there has been concerns, and sure, the comments have been of a different nature, but around Bettina Arndt, Mike Carlton, and others receiving the award. And at that time, the Council for the Order of Australia put out a very clear statement saying that the social views or the religious views or the political leanings neither qualified nor disqualified people for these awards, and Margaret Court was given it for her tennis achievements. 24 grand.
So we don't have a ceiling. We don't sort of have an upper limit on what's tolerated in terms of publicly expressed views.
Well, I think in terms of her publicly expressed views, you've heard a lot of people be critical of those views, and that is an absolute legitimate issue to raise. But in terms of her receipt of the award, that is the process that is in place. You receive them for your achievements in your specific field. Now, you can lose the award, as the order has pointed out, for convictions of crimes or for adverse findings by courts or indeed for civil penalties, but none of those apply in this particular case.
Josh Frydenberg is with you this morning, the Federal Treasurer. Treasurer at the IMF has upgraded. It's a growth forecast globally, but does warn that recovery is going to be uneven and patchy. It also wants governments, it says, to introduce policies that'll deal with the inequality revealed by the pandemic. Now, I know that that's something that bothers you in particular. So what particular policies are you developing to deal with the entrenched inequality that's been revealed by pandemic?
Well, actually, the facts tell a different story, Virginia, in terms of what has happened to inequality over the course of the pandemic. So since the start of the pandemic, we have seen the incomes for the bottom 10% income decile increase by 20%. And we've seen that in the data as we've put in place programs like JobKeeper and the JobSeeker Coronavirus Supplement.
Now, so I recognise just to quickly jump in, if I can, just to sort of qualify that, I accept that, but as you note, that's actually sort of a welfare-driven and impermanent increase.
But the key, as we saw pre-COVID, to reducing welfare dependency was to get greater job creation. In fact, before COVID, when the unemployment rate fell to 5.1% in February, bearing in mind that it's 6.6% today, Welfare dependency fell to its lowest level in 30 years. And we saw that the Productivity Commission did a report into inequality in Australia and talked about how there were improved living standards that were, in their words, evenly shared across every income decile. So I understand there is a need to keep working on reducing inequality, but the key for us is to prevent that scarring of the labour market that you get after recessions and to get more people into jobs.
But do you not agree with the... do you think the IMF has made the wrong call in saying that entrenched inequality has been revealed by the pandemic? I mean, it was obvious to anyone sitting in this chair and listening to this radio station and other things besides that all of a sudden we learnt about those whose job insecurity was entrenched and who fell right through the net the moment anything happened in the economic environment. So do you think the IMF has got it wrong?
Well, I think there's a different way to understand what the IMF was saying, because Australia's economic...
You're trying a different way to spin the IMF? Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm saying that the economic response from Australia was actually quite different to the rest of the world. When we put in place an economy-wide wage subsidy that was there for 3.6 million people at $1,500 a fortnight.
But that's temporary. I mean, the most logical thing to do, really, looking at what the IMF is calling on governments to do, is to put in place a permanent increase to JobSeeker, and there would not be a business leader or a welfare sector group in the country who would oppose you. That must be something that you're about to do, Treasurer.
Well, as you know, the elevated level of the JobSeeker payment goes to the end of March, and we'll have more to say one way or the other before then. But what I do note from the IMF report, importantly, is that they've upgraded their global economic growth forecasts. And when it comes to countries like Spain, they're talking about their economy contracting by 11% in 2020, the UK 10%, Italy and France 9%, even countries like Japan and Canada and Germany by more than 5%. Whereas here in Australia, according to our last Treasury forecast at MIEFO, we're going to contract by about 2.5% in 2020. And you can see how Australia is so much better placed on the economic front than countries around the world.
Well, we wait to hear you saying something on JobSeeker. Everyone has bated breath on that. I know you have to go. Just quickly and finally, if, as Victoria's most senior federal Liberal, you can't stop long-time federal member for Menzies, Kevin Andrews, being unseated in that place by Army veteran and barrister Keith Wallahan, he's under pressure there, will that show that your power here is weak?
In terms of the democratic processes of the Liberal Party, it's the entitlement of anyone to challenge someone's pre-selection.
Sure, but you don't want Kevin Andrews to go, and you're working to keep him there. So if you can't keep him there, will you be weak?
Well, again, they say that every time there's a pre-selection.
This is not a pre-selection. This is unseating a sitting member.
Well, there's been plenty of pre-selections where we have been successful. What I would say is that Kevin Andrews has a very strong track record, but he's also outlined to his electorate and to his members a five-year plan for the future. He did see his primary vote, despite a very ferocious campaign from GetUp, increased by 2% at the last election, and he does play an important role chairing oversight committees on the NDIS and being heavily involved in the human rights and family law policy debates. Now, it is the right of members to obviously challenge a sitting member. It's something I did myself. And Keith Wallahan, his opponent, is respected as a lawyer, a soldier, and as a party member. So it's not begrudging him. It's just saying that the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister John Howard, and many of my other colleagues have put pen to paper to support Kevin Andrews, and that vote's upcoming, and it will be up to the members to decide. But we're very different to the Labor Party. They suspended their democratic processes. They're not having pre-selections. The Liberal Party is.